You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy weekend. A couple of quick Timberwolves notes to hit here off the top. Then I want to jump right back into Big Board 3.0. It's been since Tuesday since I've put another entry onto the Big Board. We are at number four after doing the top three, going back to last Friday, Monday, Tuesday of this week. And then today I want to finish with just kind of taking a quick look at the finale of the Athletics tier ranking system, the analysis that Seth Partnow has done over there and ranked all the NBA players, or I should say the top 125 NBA players into tiers and sub-tiers. I just kind of want to talk through what the top two tiers look like and the placement of both Towns and Russell, which we talked about earlier this week, but in the context of the full list as well. So we'll do that on today's show. First, though, a quick reminder, as always, to please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. We'll be more active on that account here shortly. We're actually going to get some real things going on. Obviously, NBA draft is, 3.5 weeks away now? And allegedly, they're obviously not going to move it again. But I say that because it's moved three times now. And then also, obviously, getting into the offseason, free agency, et cetera. So we'll have a lot more coverage on the Twitter feed as well. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of quick notes, just real quick hitters. One, ESPN has an article that came out on Friday morning. It's called Best and Worst Cases for the Warriors, Knicks, and the Teams We Haven't Seen Since March. Of course, that includes the Timberwolves, but the Timberwolves aren't the Warriors or the Knicks, so they weren't mentioned in the headline. But what they say, and this is kind of like a collective piece with a bunch of different NBA analysts. And so the Timberwolves are one of the teams that are explored on here, and they're just kind of the high points. It's literally just three paragraphs on what the best case scenario this year for the Wolves is, and then two paragraphs on the worst case. The best case is basically that Towns and Russell click, and Beasley, Culver, and Okogie can combine to be good on defense, and that the Wolves can compete for a playoff spot in the loaded Western Conference. Worst case is that they're still bad defensively, or draft somebody bad at number one, and then potentially lose their pick next year if it's not, you know, if they're bad again and they're in the lottery and the pick's only top three protected. Say they land at number four, they lose their first round pick next year as well. So obviously that's pretty obvious. I mean, I could have, I guess summed up this, what's probably like 250, 300 words in about, I don't know, however many, like 50 words. I mean, clearly the best case scenario, now, the other thing that's a little ridiculous about this exercise is the Wolves roster does not look like it will look on opening night 2021, whenever that is. I tend to think it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day in January. It could be February. Whenever it ends up being, this roster is not going to look the same as it does now. This is the same thing as taking the Wolves roster on May 30th of any normal year after the lottery, before the draft, or I guess more accurately, the week between when the finals usually end and the NBA draft in late June. This is before free agency. It's before the draft. It's before any offseason transactions are able to be made. Technically, player options haven't been picked up. There's restricted free agency to deal with. So obviously, the Wolves are going to have Towns. They're going to have Russell. They're likely going to have, really, those are the only guarantees. They're almost certainly going to have James Johnson, at least heading into next season. They're almost certainly going to have Okogie, Culver. But I mean, even Jordan McLaughlin's a restricted free agent. They're actual restricted free agents. Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernan Gomez, some guys on non-guaranteed deals like Naz Reid, Jalen Noel, Keelan Martin is a restricted free agent coming off his two-way deal. So this roster could be turned over again. They might only have 5, 6, 7 of these guys of the 14 or whatever that are under contract now next year. So it's a little bit of an exercise in futility to try and rank or at least give best and worst case scenarios for these eight teams for next year. Obviously, I get it. ESPN's got to put something out there and they're trying to keep fans of these teams engaged on ESPN.com, but there isn't really much to glean from this. I mean, we already know the likely best case scenario, unless the Wolves somehow pull off a trade for Ben Simmons or Bradley Beal, if that were to happen, then yeah, I mean, the Wolves would have to be a top 4 or 5 seed in the Western Conference or the year would be an abject failure. But assuming this roster is somewhat similar and their best players are still Towns and Russell on opening night 2021, then this team competing for the playoffs would be seen as a success this year and making progress towards acquiring another frontline star type player, a third member of the big three, if you will. And obviously the worst case is that they're bad, but not bad enough to actually get the number one pick again, which I think even if they were to keep their top three pick, it would be an extremely disappointing year for the Wolves. It would mean that something went drastically wrong. But at any rate, if you want to check that out, it's over at ESPN.com. Then the one other thing I wanted to hit on is there's basically a high-level view of free agency over at Bleacher Report, and this is by Dan Favalli. It's a little bit of an ambiguous exercise, but basically he goes through every single team in the league and lists their free agency board or their free agency. He calls them in the intro priority rankings from a bird's eye view. Each team has three spots in order of decreasing importance. So he gives priority to each team's incumbent free agents and then also other pending free agents that this team should go after. They're not rumors. He's clear about that. These are priority rankings. So for the Timberwolves, he has Malik Beasley, who of course is the Wolves' own restricted free agent, ranked number one. And he says in the article, nothing is more important to the Timberwolves than re-signing Malik Beasley. They treated him as the centerpiece in the four-team trade that cost them Robert Covington, and they don't have the cap space to replace him. That's an interesting way of putting that. The Wolves don't have the cap space to replace Beasley. That's assuming that Beasley provides the same sort of value that he did in his 14 games in a Wolves uniform earlier this year. The Wolves aren't going to get that type of value in free agency or, you know, possibly via trade if they do some maneuvering. But that's an interesting way of putting that. I think everybody knows that. And it's the chief reason why I think Beasley will be back in Minnesota. He also lists Jermichael Green as the Wolves' second highest free agency priority. He has a player option currently, Green does. And I mean, he'll have the opportunity to leave the Clippers this offseason, but he has always been kind of one of those three-point shooting bigs who can really stretch the floor, but also rebound a little bit and has good size. And sign Jermichael Green, you know, use him and James Johnson next to Karl Anthony Towns, and then ultimately, I'm sure, flip James Johnson at the trade deadline in his expiring contract. And then he also has I guess he's kind of using these two names as to represent the free agent wing market, but he lists Justin Holiday and Wes Matthews, who has a player option, as options on the wing market because they are big wings who can defend a little bit and knock down threes. Those are not bad targets. Obviously Matthews is easily on the backside of his career, but type of guy who you can plug in at the three or even the four and hit some threes and be a body to play some defense. Justin Holiday, same thing, obviously a little bit more promise there in bringing him in. Jermichael Green is a really nice player too, and probably falls in line with what Gerson Rosas is looking for. So those are interesting names. As we get past the draft and really into free agency, we'll do some free agency player capsules. We'll go through guys who are free agents, and all these guys are going to be on that list, especially a name like Jermichael Green, who I think could be a real option depending on what the Wolves do in the draft and what the front court situation looks like besides Towns heading into next year. So those are names to keep an eye on, but go check that out at Bleacher Report. Let's jump right into Big Board 3.0 and talk about player number four. I'll quickly recap 1, 2, and 3 and then talk about the fourth player on the board. But first, let's talk about Built Go. We've talked about Built Bar for a long time in this show. Built Go is not a protein bar. It's actually the best workout gel on the market, of course, put out by our great friends at Built Bar. It's 1.5 ounce packages. It comes in 1.5 ounce packages. You can put it in your pocket, put it in your backpack, bring it with you. We're all busy. We've all got work. We've all got hobbies. We're listening to our podcasts like this one as we're running. We're driving to pick up our kids. We're, you know, in between meetings at work or whatever. And Built Go is the perfect workout gel that isn't really just for workouts either. It can help you break through mental or physical walls. You can break through those walls with Go every single day. It's like 5-hour energy, but without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for your body. It's just like drinking a monster drink with only a third of the caffeine and better results. It comes in 3 flavors: peanut butter, honey, chocolate, coconut, and chocolate mint. It combines energy gel with collagen protein. And collagen protein, if you're not familiar, is fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast and it's easy on the stomach. Built Go also kicks in vitamin B6, vitamin B12, more than 10,000% of your daily percentage. And the collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. It literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com. Use promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. All right, let's jump back into Big Board 3.0. And quickly, I'll run through who the top three players ranked so far on this edition of the Big Board are, and then we'll get into number four and spend most of our time in this segment talking about player number four. So number one on this edition, which is the third time we've done a Big Board here over the past several months, number one is LaMelo Ball. It's the second time in a row he's been number one on the Big Board. You can go back and listen to that pod. I spent a good 10 minutes talking about Ball. I think that was actually Monday of this week, so go back and check that out. Number two is Killian Hayes. He's gone anywhere from one to three, and he's back up to two. And I talked extensively about him as well. And then number three is Anthony Edwards. And, you know, I really don't like the idea of the Timberwolves taking him at number one in this draft. I think the only way he should end up on the Wolves is if they were to trade back and somehow Edwards fell. And if the value is too good to pass up, I just think there are too many concerns about his game to have him any higher. Now, clearly, I have him ranked ahead of, for instance, who we're about to talk about at number four, and everybody below that. It doesn't mean I think Edwards is a bad prospect. It means that I think there are too many concerns to draft him at one. So clearly, that's the case of everyone else on this list. And so I want to be clear that while I don't like Edwards as a prospect, that doesn't mean I think that he's like a lost cause or the Wolves should avoid him at all costs. Remember, the Wolves have the number one pick. So now we're talking about guys that the Wolves could theoretically trade back for, because obviously they can draft anyone they want at one. So you could see the Wolves trading back, you know, unlikely, but maybe they trade to Charlotte at three, or they trade back at number four and end up with the Bulls pick, or six with the Hawks pick, or eight with the Knicks pick. Those are all teams that potentially could look to move up to number one. And so it's important to rank all these players and, you know ahead of time, knowing going into things, which players the Wolves would like where. And for me, that's who I, you know, if they trade back to three and Edwards is there, well, I'd seriously consider taking him unless my one or two guys, you know, unless somehow Ball or Hayes, who I think is very likely to still be there at three or four, those are guys I would take ahead of Edwards. So just to be clear about that. So number four for me is Tyrese Haliburton. He's a guard out of Iowa State, and he's actually a really similar player to Killian Hayes, in my opinion. They're almost identical size. They're both really good playmakers. I'd probably put Haliburton probably third, maybe fourth on my list of best playmakers and in terms of passing ability and court vision in this draft, behind certainly Ball and then also behind Hayes. But, you know, good size. Same thing as Killian Hayes in that sense. He's 6'5 with about a 6'8 wingspan, about the same. He's a little bit lighter than Hayes. He's not quite as strong. And his shooting numbers at Iowa State were impressive. And he hit on, in two seasons with the Cyclones, he made 42.6% of his three-point attempts and averaged a little over four attempts per game. So he is a good shooter and certainly can play off the ball. The only thing with him is he really, I mean, even more so than Hayes, I think, would do better with the ball in his hands as a creator. The biggest concern for me with Haliburton is because of his limited athleticism, and also he's got a little bit of a slight build. While he is long, he's not super athletic and he's not super big. Hayes is a little bit more built at this point. Haliburton doesn't really score in the paint, well, and he tries to avoid contact, and because he's not ultra athletic, that leads to some difficult attempts in the paint, and that would be my primary concern with him. And also related to the fit with the Timberwolves, D'Angelo Russell has some of those same issues. Russell's not great in the paint. He was a little better this year, both with Golden State and Minnesota, than he had been with Brooklyn. But Russell doesn't love to go in among the trees and try and finish at the rim on difficult shot attempts. And he's not super athletic. He's big, but, if the Wolves were to have Haliburton and Russell in the same backcourt, neither one of them would be really, you know, threatening, imposing figures for opposing defenses when it comes to getting downhill and going to the rim. Both of those guys would be looking to pass the ball before taking any contact at the rim. And neither of them are fantastic finishers at the rim either. So that would be, I guess, my biggest concern with Haliburton. He's got some of the same defensive concerns as Hayes in terms of his awareness. And while I do think he's a little bit of a better shooter and can do a little bit of those extra things, you know, grabbing steals, even some block shots here and there, his rebounding rates and things like that are similar and maybe even a little better than Hayes. I have concerns about his aversion to contact and inability to finish through contact in the paint would probably be the biggest reason why I would pick Hayes over him. I also think Hayes' playmaking ability is a half step above Haliburton's, certainly, and Hayes is kind of in a second tier by himself in this draft in terms of playmakers, based on what I've seen and the scouting reports that I've read. So I would put Halliburton fourth on my big board. I do think if the Wolves were to trade back and he's available, I think he can play with Russell. I just don't think it's quite as perfect because both Ball's a superior athlete. Hayes is bigger and just better at finishing through contact and also even a better free throw shooter. Halliburton's a good free throw shooter. He's upper 70s, low 80s. Hayes is even better than that. All these guys could fit next to Russell. The problem is that they're all guys who want to have the ball in their hand and create. So we're talking about three of the top four players on my big board would have been slam dunk picks if the Wolves hadn't traded for D'Angelo Russell, because they're all guys that are going to want the ball in their hands. The question is, who can split playmaking abilities the best, playmaking duties the best with D'Angelo Russell and play off the ball effectively? Halliburton's the best of the three in terms of shooting. I just think that Hayes is the most balanced between Ball, Hayes, and Halliburton in terms of playing off the ball and providing multiple things to the offense. So that is why Hayes, for me, fits in above Halliburton on my big board, but also why I think Halliburton's still a solid prospect and somebody that if the Wolves traded back to four or five and Halliburton's on the board and the guys above him on my board are gone, I'd take a hard look at Halliburton. A lot of the teams linked to him so far are some of the smarter front offices in the league. I think there's also something to be said for that. Pay attention to the smart front offices, the Warriors, the Spurs, teams like that. Who are they looking at? Who are they rumored to be interested in? That can tip you off as to guys who are likely going to outperform their draft position if they fall too far in this draft. And Halliburton, to me, fits that category and is someone that the Wolves could target, certainly in a trade back. All right, I want to wrap up today's show by talking about the tier ranking system on The Athletic. Put a bow on that series, which ended today on Friday, and that'll be our last topic for today's show. All right, we've spent a few minutes on each show, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this week, talking about The Athletic's tier ranking. So I don't want to do a full recap of it necessarily, but basically what it is, the cliff notes are, this is Seth Partnow at The Athletic. He's a former front office executive for the Milwaukee Bucks. And he, instead of just doing a straight player rank, which is, you know, a lot of times crowdsourced by sites like ESPN, or it's just a few experts that vote on whatever criteria they feel like voting on, this is being done more scientifically. It factors in age, contract, injury history, and then also a number of advanced metrics that give a more full picture of how good a player is compared to his peers. So what I appreciate is that Partnow, instead of going like 1 through 125, he's done tiers. And so I talked about tier five and four on Wednesday, tier three on Thursday. And so please go back and listen to my analysis of where some of these Wolves players landed in those tiers. D'Angelo Russell was in tier 4B. So this is 125 players. So that puts him in the general range of like 75th to, I think it was like 120th or something in the league in terms of his ranking. And that seems about right. And other players in Russell's tier, Ricky Rubio, Zach LaVine, Patrick Beverley, Spencer Dinwiddie, his former teammate in Brooklyn. And then yesterday we talked about tier three. Karl-Anthony Towns made it into 3A, which puts him in basically the top 20 to, I think, 24 players in the league, depending on how you want to rank them. And in Towns' tier was Jamal Murray, Drew Holiday, Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Kyle Lowry, Ben Simmons, Bam Adebayo. And that left two tiers left. So on Thursday, tier two was released. And then Friday, today, tier one was released. I just want to quickly list who's in these tiers. And again, Partnow is very specific about this not being an actual player ranking. He's not assigning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to each of these guys. He's going with these tiers and subgroups. So in tier two, 2C, so this is effectively, I think this would be like rankings 12 through or 13 through 16. In no particular order, he has Chris Paul, Jason Tatum, Paul George, Rudy Gobert. Tier 2B, a half step up, is Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid. 2A is Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic, and Nikola Jokic. This to me is the most interesting one. So let me finish the ranking quick and then jump back to 2A real quickly. 1B, just two players, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. 1A, Giannis, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and James Harden. So my first glance at this without diving into any of his analysis was tier 1A is correct, although I'd bump Harden to 1B because I think that the only time the Rockets have really seen much playoff success and threatened to go into the finals was when he had, you know, Chris Paul is his running mate in Houston. And, you know, just crudely looking at this, if you're looking at Giannis, you're looking at Kawhi, you're looking at LeBron, those are players who can truly drag their team to the promised land. Now, I recognize that Giannis hasn't actually done that yet either. However, the Bucks have been so good for the last year and a half, and Giannis himself has been so good, and he's a two-way player. Harden, to be clear, Harden has improved defensively, and he's okay on defense, much better than he was several years ago. But all that to say, I would have put Harden in the next sub-tier because I think Giannis as a two-way player has done a little bit more. And again, this is without me digging into the analysis. This is my initial reaction. So I would put Harden in the tier with Durant and Curry, which is 1B. And you could easily make the argument that a healthy Curry and a healthy Durant should be in 1A. And this is essentially your top six players in the league. And I don't know that there's really any question about that when they're all healthy. It's obviously tricky to rank a guy in Durant who missed a full season and Curry who missed the majority of a season. But, you know, those are in some order the top six players in the league when they're healthy. And I think that that's almost indisputable. Now, the only other ones who would have an argument would be 2A, and that's Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic. I think there's some people out there that would say Doncic is a top five player. He was first team All-NBA this year. And if you're discounting Durant and Curry because of injury, then yeah, you know, Doncic is probably number five. But I like him here in 2A. He's got to show a little bit more defensively. Still, he's got to improve his outside shooting just a little bit. Davis is, there's actually a Wolves note in here that I'll get to in a second, but Davis in 2A with Jokic also makes sense to me. I think you could argue that Jokic should be a half step lower. I get that he's been a better all-around player than Towns the last couple of years. I'm not arguing that, but to have him in the top, what is that, top nine? I think he's probably more 2B, 2C type player in the Joel Embiid, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler category. Again, partly due to playoff success, partly due to Jokic just, he's not a fully two-way player. And not all these guys are either. That's not the criteria. I just think top nine is a little bit, it's tough. It's kind of right on the edge. I think Jokic is probably somewhere in the 10 to 12 range. And admittedly, I'm nitpicking a little. Lillard, Embiid, and Butler at 2B all make sense. And then going back to Paul Tatum, George, and Gobert at 2C, you know, those guys, I really think a lot of those guys are interchangeable with the 3A grouping. So the Timberwolves note that I wanted to mention is that Partnow compares Anthony Davis to Kevin Garnett in the sense that to be a tier one player, you have to make the playoffs more than two times in 7 years as the best player on your team, which is what happened to Anthony Davis. And Garnett's, the example he gives, Kevin Garnett's Timberwolves made the postseason every year from his second to eighth year in the league, even if they only advanced out of the first round once. Prior to this postseason, Davis simply hasn't shown he can carry a team in that way. And this is kind of the idea of a player carrying a team to me has always been, it's akin to playing hero ball at the end of the game. And a lot of times those things get lumped together. They're not quite the same thing. There really aren't any NBA finals teams that are literally carried all the way to the finals by one player. I mean, you could go back to, I guess, like LeBron's Cavs team that went all the way to the finals and lost initially, or I guess the team that lost to the Magic in the Eastern Conference Finals with LeBron. Some teams like that, you could look at more recently. I mean, Giannis has Chris Middleton and that was just a good deep team. So when you're talking about a player carrying a team, you can certainly carry a team to the playoffs. Kevin Garnett did that eight times. I mean, outside of the year, you know, Zerbiak made one all-star team. Sam Cassell made the all-star team the year they went to the conference finals, but Garnett was literally carrying the Timberwolves to the playoffs. Anthony Davis only did that for the Pelicans once, or I guess twice. And, I mean, clearly Towns hasn't done it. So Partnow's argument makes sense. It's not the same thing as playing hero ball at the end of a game. That's different. But those arguments can get misconstrued because a lot of times the guy who needs to quote unquote take over a game and put the team on his back, that's different than doing it over the course of a season and bringing a team to the playoffs. And it's not realistic to ask any superstar to do it all the way to the finals or much less to win a championship. LeBron had AD this year. The Warriors obviously had Steph, Draymond, and Klay, and then they had Durant. And the Heat had their big three. And you look at all the champions, you know, the Spurs, I guess the Mavericks with Dirk Nowitzki is probably the closest thing with how crazy he played, but it's not like other players didn't step up. So I understand the argument Partnow is making related to Davis and some of these players, and you got to find a differentiating factor somewhere. You can only judge players based on these results. And so I definitely understand his reasoning behind these tiers. At risk of just reading off the whole article, I would really recommend if you have an Athletic subscription, and if you don't, you should get one. But if you do, go read these pieces, because as he goes through the list, he spends more and more time on each player, and his breakdown of like how unique Jokic's game is really, really awesome. The Anthony Davis commentary is really interesting too. He talks about his self-created splits, you know, and how he operated within the Lakers offense this year and the Lakers lineup. And just a really fun read and a fun deep dive by a really smart and talented writer. So go check those out. And again, Towns and Russell are both on the list. And Towns was in the tier three article that was published, I believe, Wednesday. Russell was in the tier four article published on Tuesday. And plenty of former Wolves also in tier four. We talked about Rubio and LaVine. Kevin Love was in tier five. So there's a lot of players with Timberwolves ties to read about. So go check that out. And give that a look. All right, that's all we have for you today. Of course, we'll be back on Monday. If you're not familiar, this is a daily show, Monday through Friday. So we'll be back on Monday with that edition of the show. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. I did not set up that handle, by the way. I know that Timberwolves fans don't often refer to their team as the T-Wolves, but that is the handle of our Twitter account. Also, if you do have a second, please help us out with a review on Apple. That definitely helps us get in front of more folks, in front of more eyes and ears. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.